Leah, and you are?
Sharon, I'm here, Michelle, so I'm here. Whenever I'm in town, this is the place I want to be. Tuesday night with Joshua and from us.
Atma?
My name is Atma. Now I'm in New York.
When did you move here? How long ago?
3 months.
3 months back. Atma is going to be our guest speaker next Tuesday while I'm down in Florida visiting my son. And you'll be speaking about the importance of sacred acts. Is that correct? The performance of sacred acts.
We're at about 4:30 or 4:30 or so. So we're wrapping up a section with Ego and Yetia.
Lovely. Great. Yeah.
Maybe so, we'll do something special like a non-Yetia.
Lovely. Atma has been studying corporate psychology and is completing his PhD and is also completing a commentary on the Yoga Sutras. So please avail yourself of him being here next week. Howdy, stranger. Look who's back.
I'm Anna.
How nice to see you. How have you been, Anna?
Good. How have you been?
Very well. Thank you. Thank you. Rodney, how are you today?
Oh, it was just the greatest day.
What a nice answer.
Thank you.
Nick, how's tricks?
Yeah, everything's good. Latest trick is I had some metal glue for my leg, so that's why I wasn't here last week.
The pins are out, eh?
Pins are out, screws are out. They actually gave them back to me. They give you the hardware, and I have this like one thin, like, very thin metal rod that my parents were in town last week. They suggested I make it into a necklace or bracelet or something like that.
Well, it's proof positive that the body is a yantra. Now, this is Susan. Susan was at our record this past Saturday for the first online session of the Bhagavad Gita series. And we had 5 vocabulary terms. Right? Do you remember what the others are? Putting you on the spot. We had Atma. Right? We had Bhagavan.
Lineage.
Parampara. All right, very good. One of the 5 terms was yantra. The body is a machine. So that you have some leftover parts now from your machine to remind you.
Yeah. That's great. Some parts of the machine got better, so it's good.
There you go.
The word of other parts.
There you go.
And Nick became a certified yoga teacher in Costa Rica.
Haribo! Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was in Costa Rica. So I met David. And, it was an awesome trip.
Purnima, say your name and introduce yourself so that everyone can know who you are.
Purnima, and I serve here to move people.
Purnima is kind of a stalwart here. I think Jiva Mukti, Purnima, Jiva Mukti.
That's because of my lineage.
Oh, very nice. That's a true shishya. That's a real disciple right there. That's Michael in the back. Everyone knows Michael. He's kind of the cerebral cortex of our Tuesday gathering. This is Susan. May I introduce you? Susan was one of our guests on Saturday. From Jersey City. All right. Well, thank you for coming all the way from Jersey City for us.
Just a path,
right? You're on the right path. Good. Yes, Mike.
Is it hot here? I turned off the overhead ladder fans, but
is everyone okay for the time being? All right. But speak up. If it gets uncomfortable, just say so. Who's our guest in the back?
My name is Kushal.
Hi, Kushal.
I've come off and on to the UMP a lot, and I was coming here for a class, but I saw the festivities. So.
That's a good description for you. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Liz, and I wanted to teach you Shani today.
Liz is doing part
Oh, very nice. Very
involved.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, for those of you who are new to our Tuesday sessions, we end each of these little gatherings with an arti ceremony. The Sanskrit word arti simply means an offering. And we offer back to Radha and Krishna, the source of creation, the elements of creation. So you'll see different fire and water and air objects during the course of the ceremony. So your inaugural arti. It's like your coming out party here. All right, lovely. Jaideep, say hi to everybody.
Hi,
another pillar of our Tuesday gatherings. Thanks for being here. Cher?
Hi, I'm Cher. As always, I'm very happy to be here.
Artistic director here at the Tuesday gathering. The altar is Cher's creation. She's always... It's important to have an altar. You know, the Bhagavad Gita is a bhakti text, the quintessential bhakti devotional text. And so it's fitting that we don't operate in a vacuum, but that there's a focus of attention here that, first of all, should not be on me, but on Krishna, the speaker of the Gita. So thank you for always bringing Krishna into our life. Robert, how are you?
I'm okay.
Good to see you. Yeah. Hot enough for you?
It's plenty hot for me here. At the moment, it's not so hot.
Okay. We'll get into that after class. That was a good segue, though. So, I've been meditating on the focus of the month, and I thought I'd pick a verse in the Gita to talk about that tonight. Before we get into it, anybody have any... Oh, those of you who are going to be going with Leela, please do not feel abashed about picking up and going when you need to leave. This is the evening that commemorates the passing of a very dear Vaishnav, Aindra, who for many years was the person who kept the chanting culture going in Vrindavan at the Krishna Balaram temple, which is truly the heart of devotional India, is Krishna's village, 2 hours southeast of Delhi, is it? And Aindra for years, I think he was originally from England, was inspired by God to dedicate his life to chanting. And every day he'd be there for hours and hours and hours. And his kirtans, which you can hear, if you Google them, you'll find them online. Some people are just blessed by God with that, a voice of devotion. And that was Indra. And he would inspire everyone around him. He passed away, is this 1 year now?
Three years,
yeah. So this evening at the Bhakti Center over on 2nd Avenue.
The 2nd Avenue.
2nd Avenue Temple, right?
Matchless
Gifts, 26 2nd Avenue. There's a gathering for him this evening. So if you were attending that, please do not in any way feel abashed. Please do go and avail yourself of that lovely gathering that's going on there tonight. It's been a really, really interesting time this past week, and it kind of fit in with the focus of the month, which is overcoming negative emotions. I encourage you to read that posting out there before you go if you haven't read it yet. Sharon does a wonderful job of describing overcoming negative emotion through the recitation of mantra and through friendliness and compassion. A lovely way of envisioning the move away from negative emotion, and you'll also read causes of negative emotion there, which is important to understand. The verse that I thought would be appropriate, and then I just want to get into some stories. I mean, what a week it's been. Amazing. Amazing week. We're going to jump ahead a little bit to the fifth chapter. This is the last verse of the fifth chapter, 529, on page 255. Maureen is not here tonight, is she? No. Okay, I've got the Russian George for her when she comes.
529?
Huh?
529?
Yes, 529. So the protocol is that there's an invocation, which we recite responsively together, and then we'll recite the verse together as well.
Prabhupada is on 259.
I'm so sorry. 255.
259.
Page 255. 255. Text 529. It's
text
verse.
29.
That's correct.
Text 29.
Got it.
Chapter 5, verse 29, in the hardback edition of the Orange Book. It's on page 255. Invocation is as follows: Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kindly repeat with me.
Om. Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhuktaram Yajna Tapasam. Try that first line with me.
Bhuktaram Yajna Tapasam. The long line over an A transforms an A into an A. So,
Bhuktaram.
And
this squiggly line over Cedilla, technically, over the N, is kind of Nya. So it's a rolling N. Yajna. 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 Tapasam. Again, a long A. So, Bhuktaram Yajna Tapasam.
Bhuktaram Yajna Tapasam.
The second line, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. The acute accent over an S transforms it into a sh sound. So, Maheshwaram.
Sarvaloka Maheshwaram.
Try that again with me.
Sarvaloka Maheshwaram.
Now the dot under the R in Suridam makes it a R, like an R-I. So Suridam Sarvabhutanam. Suridam Sarvabhutanam.
Suridam Sarvabhutanam.
Try that.
Suridam Sarvabhutanam.
Gyatva mam shantim richati. Gyatva mam shantim richati. Now listen to the melody and then we'll recite it together, right?
Gyatva mam shantim richati.
Try it with me.
Gyatva mam shantim richati.
So I'll recite the line and then we repeat together.
Bhuktaram yajna tapasam. Bhuktaram yajna tapasam. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram.
Suridam Sarvabhutanam.
Suridam Sarvabhutanam.
Yatva mam shantim richati.
Yatva mam shantim richati.
Bhuktaram yajna tapasam. Costa Rica did you some good.
Yeah, good practice, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well done. Well done, everyone. Yeah, really, I mean, I can remember when this was a really scary moment. No one wanted to raise their hand. Lovely, lovely. Okay, translation. Text 29, chapter 5. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. On the next page in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says about halfway down, a pure soul is the eternal servant of God as his fragmental part and parcel. He comes into contact with Maya, illusion, due to the desire to lord it over Maya, and that is the cause of his many sufferings. And then down at the bottom, the Eightfold Yoga mysticism is automatically practiced in Krishna consciousness because the ultimate purpose is served. There is a gradual process of elevation in the practice of yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. But these only preface perfection by devotional service, which alone can award peace to the human being. It is the highest perfection of life. But let's connect some of these dots here. First of all, starting with the focus of the month. Negative emotion. I mean, I don't think anyone would object if life were a cakewalk, if it were possible just to kind of go through your day without really feeling too many of the vagaries of the ups and downs. It's fairly standard that wisdom teachings focus on how we generate those emotions ourself. It doesn't mean, like, the other hat that I wear is Holocaust studies. So it's not that things don't happen. Right? It's not that all the ills of the world are our own creation. There are forces that are separate and apart from our control. How we deal with those forces is an important issue as well. But as far as possible, the encouragement that's offered in the wisdom texts is recognize your contribution to the hurdles that are before you. Is it possible, even theoretically, is it possible that something I'm doing is creating the very thing that is impeding me from getting where I want to go? I love that the prescription here is, first of all, recitation of mantra. And Prabhupada once described mantra as, how did he describe it? An inoculation. We're in a contaminated environment. Just by being in a material atmosphere, we're subject to contamination of all kinds. You know, there are allurements, there are pitfalls, there are dangers. The recitation of mantra is like going into a contaminated environment having been vaccinated against infection. You can be in that environment and be of some good there because you yourself have become immune, at least to some extent, to contamination by the world around you. If you're ever in a dangerous situation, just start chanting. Just start chanting. It's the simple. George Harrison told a story once. He was in an airplane flying into L.A. And the plane went into a nosedive. I mean, he was convinced that this plane was going to crash. And he started chanting, Hare Krishna, just loud. You know, everyone was kind of, I think they were more concerned about his chanting than the fact that the plane was in a nosedive. It did level out. One experience I had was, as a lad, I guess I was about 20 years old, I lived in Krishna temples for 13 years. So the 70s, as I mentioned on Saturday, are a bit of a blur. 1973, I was living in Hamburg, Germany, and there was a Krishna chanting party. We would go out, as Leela does every day, to Union Square Park and chant mantras and the holy names of God and just kind of bring that into the public purview. Now, the person who was in charge of the temple at that time had a little bit of a reckless idea about where to bring these young people for the chanting parties. And we went to the Reeperbahn, a very aptly named part of Hamburg, which was kind of the bad boys section of town. It's where all the brothels and the bars. And Hamburg is a seaport. And so when all the sailors would come, make a beeline for the Reeperbahn, because that's where all the action was. So we would go there to chant Hare Krishna. And we show up, you know, orange robes, shaved heads, in the roughest part of town. You know, it's like waving a red flag at a bull or something. These guys, sure enough, hear it, and they come out of the bar with bottles, and they start throwing bottles. Hit a couple of us. So we're trying to figure out, we kind of go into a huddle, what do we do here? Do we run? Well, whether it was youthful exuberance, whether it was sheer stupidity or divine inspiration, we decided, let's stick it out. Let's have the strength of our conviction. So we redoubled the energy, and you know, everyone kind of threw their hands up in the air, like Draupadi, when she could no longer hold on to that sari, and you know, those warriors were trying to strip her naked, and she just depended on Krishna, and he became this infinite length of cloth. So hands went up in the air, voices went up in the air. We went up, like, dancing through the Reeperbahn, and these drunks just looked at us stupefied, absolutely mesmerized by this display of, I don't know what they thought. And we just kind of like sailed through the whole thing unharmed. I don't recommend it, honestly. I can't tell you that I think it's something you should all try. It was a pretty scary moment. But I guess the point is that there's a power in mantra. You know, mantras are not invented. They have the word in the word at Sotheby's would be provenance. You know, an antique or a classic work of art has provenance. It has pedigree. It comes from a lineage. There's documentation that demonstrate how it is that this particular mantra has withstood the test of time. It's coming from a transcendent source. It's not of this world. So reciting that mantra is an extraordinarily powerful thing. And it's a very, very easy way to kind of flip those negative emotions right on their head. That I can tell you from my own experience. You know, whatever it is that you're hurting from, there's shelter. The word is ashraya. To take shelter of the holy names is the phrase in Sanskrit. To give yourself over. Now, that said, there's a way to chant. There's a way to chant. What is the way to chant? Any thoughts on that?
Wholehearted.
Yeah. There are no hard and fast rules. It's not like you have to be a Sanskritist or know the perfect pronunciation, anything like that. But it should come from the heart. It's not a mechanical thing. Again, when I was living in temples, there were times when we would get up in the morning, and in the early days, we would be chanting on our beads. And there's a prescribed number of beads to chant in order to receive initiation. These three strands of neck beads means formal initiation into bhakti or devotional practice. The Gaudiya tradition in India says 16 times round on a strand or loop of 108 beads. It's about an hour and a half to 2 hours of chanting every day. A little tough for some people. So I usually say start with 5 minutes. But occasionally it would get into a drone because the mind would wander. So it, you know, be kind of mechanical. Hare Krishna, you're thinking about other things. Come back. If that happens, forgive yourself, but come back to the focus on the sound of the mantra. The focus is on the sound. God is in the sound of his name. The Sanskrit verse in this regard is Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purnushuddho Nityamukto Binadvam Namanamino. Namanamino. In the spiritual realm, there's no difference between the name, the object, and the predicate of the object. The name, the word representing the object, is the same as the object itself. There's no difference. That's not true in this world. If you're thirsty and you chant water, water, it doesn't quench your thirst. Because the name is different from the thing. On the spiritual platform, there's no difference between God and his name, God and his image, God and his devotion, God and his discussions of his pastimes. It's all of the same spiritual nature. So that moment of chanting is inviting God into your life. So doing it with some degree of focus and attention is a healthy idea. Why this verse? Well, because what Krishna is telling Arjuna here in this verse is that there are pangs of material miseries, which is what came to mind when I thought of those negative emotions. You know, the pangs of life in this world are comprised in large measure negative, you know, feelings of bitterness or hatred or disappointment, sadness. And the reason why it kind of rings a loud bell for me this week is that my mom broke up with her oldest friend this week. My mom is 88 and her friend is 87. And they've been friends more than half a century. And they go back to when they worked together at Ruder Finn Communications. They were both executives there. And my mom's friend, when they first met, was energetic, bright, insightful, a go-getter, fun-loving, you know, this remarkable young woman. And she married, or technically remarried, and her husband was well-to-do and adored her, absolutely doted on her. And spoiled her silly, frankly. She became quite spoiled. And all of a sudden, this very independent, proactive woman became pampered and became dependent on that. So that when her husband died, which was 10 years, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, he was a very, very dear friend. She was bereft of her knight in shining armor. And all of a sudden, what was she left with? She was left with bitterness, anger, a sense of having been deserted, abandoned. And she lives in her bed now. And my mom couldn't take it. The friend who had been for so many years, this vibrant partner. I mean, they would travel the world together and they would laugh hysterically. I mean, the humor was just absolutely delicious. And I remember seeing them when I was a kid just laughing a lot. So things change, circumstances change, people change, disappointments arise. And then I look at my mom and I ask her, how have you avoided that? I mean, you're, you know, getting up there. How have you avoided the bitterness, the disappointment, the sadness over lost youth or whatever? And her answer, I think, was very revealing and very apropos of our discussion here. She said, well, I didn't avoid it. First of all, I went through it too. But then something happened, and I didn't want to be like that. One reason she said that she broke up with her friend was that it was no longer the same person. And the new person she didn't like. This was someone who was too depressed, too much in that negative emotional state, and was alienating people. And at a certain point, you know, there's a kind of self-fulfilling behavior where that's probably what she wants to do. She wants to alienate people. Why we can get into. Why it is that we behave. Arjuna asks Krishna this question in the Gita. He says, why is it? You have to remember, here's Arjuna, very smart, very advanced yogi. He's there on the battlefield. He understands he should fight. He understands this is my battle, and I'm refusing to do it. So he asks Krishna directly. He says, why is it that we know we have to go in a certain direction, and we defeat ourselves by our own behavior? We refuse to do the very thing that we're supposed to do. What is it that compels us to act against our own best interests? Even if intellectually we know, this is wrong, I shouldn't be doing this. My mom's friend, I think on at least a subconscious level, she knows that this is not where she should be. She's too smart, she's too bright a person. There's something else going on there. And it's very often that when we get into a kind of negative feedback pattern with these negative emotions, they start to reinforce themselves. I'm not worthy of a happy life. I don't deserve success in my yoga practice. You can plug in your own, you know, formula there. And it's a self-image generated from life in the material world. From childhood, we develop these impressions. If we've talked about this in previous classes, you know, and Bhagavad Gita for me is this absolutely pristine parallel course in, you know, 101 psychology. So, you know, those who have heard this before, kindly forgive the repetition. But if you grow up in an environment that does not favor encouragement, self-confidence, you know, if you're always being put down, for example, because perhaps your parents didn't have very high self-esteem, so everyone else was always also not good or not worthy, maybe you grow up with that sense of yourself in that way. What is the Bhagavad Gita doing? It's bringing us back to the healthy self-image of the soul. What is yoga doing? Yoga is surfacing that healthy self-image, which allows you to recognize, aha, that's the negative emotional pattern that I'm familiar with, but now I'm equipped with different tools. I can distance myself from that because I understand myself to be something different. It doesn't necessarily mean that those emotions go away. This is important. Remember, we talked about this on Saturday. Sometimes spiritual success looks like material failure. You can't judge your spiritual success by any external circumstances or criteria. Things may not look like they've changed, but that doesn't mean that they haven't changed. How do you measure consciousness? You can't put consciousness on a scale and weigh it. So the progress may be there, even if you can't see it happening. Negative emotions don't necessarily go away. This is the point. Don't misunderstand that when the focus of the month recommends that you overcome, the Sanskrit word is nirodha. Patanjali uses the word nirodha, which can be translated as overcome. It perhaps might be, in a more nuanced way, be translated as properly managed. Nirodha is how do you manage those emotions, so that you acknowledge them. If you deny them, they're just going to come back in some other form. You can't deny the reality of the life we have here in this world. That's running away. And yoga is never about running away. Never. So acknowledging that things change and accepting. So going back to my mom, I said, well, so how did you do it? She said, well, I went to the Mayo Clinic. And I spent a week there, you know. We talked about her going to the Mayo Clinic. I know I talk about my mom a lot, I talk about my son a lot, I talk about my family. She went to the Mayo Clinic and, you know, you pay good money to have a team of doctors literally look you over from head to toe. They examined how she walked. They examined her diet. They looked at every inch of how she lived her life, because she was feeling depressed, she was feeling sad, lack of energy, all those things. And the head physician said to her, Mrs. Green, I just have to tell you, we don't find anything wrong with you. And they, you know, put some corrective implants in her shoes, you know, cookies and so on. You know, but other than that. So she said, so what is going on with me? What's happening? Very instructive. The head physician said, well, how old are you now? She said, I'm 78, 79, whatever. It seems to me, Mrs. Green, that you haven't, that you're not a young woman anymore, and you're not going to be a young woman anymore. And you haven't given yourself a chance to grieve over the loss of your younger self. You're an older woman. Your body's simply not going to do the things that... And she started crying like a waterfall, like Niagara Falls, the tears were coming out, because the physician had touched the issue for her. Things change. Change is inevitable. How we deal with that change is a test of your progress in yoga practice. Not whether you can deny the change or move away from it or it's not there anymore, but how you can nirodha, how you manage that change. I grew up on 60th Street. Where? That way. Well, it's behind me, all right? I grew up on 60th Street behind the Coliseum, or what used to be, now it's the Time Warner Complex, right? Now it's chic. You can't get in there anymore. When I grew up there, my mom was a slum neighborhood here. And the Coliseum was this absolutely undeniable mountain. It was permanent. It was a fixture in my life. In growing up, we moved in, I was 6 years old or whatever. That building was my environment. It was my world. I made friends with a guard at the side entrance, and he snuck me into every show. I got to see every show in the Coliseum for free. The boat show, the outdoor sporting show, the flower show. I didn't care. I'd go to any show because it was free. You know? What does a seven-year-old want with flowers? But I'd go in because... And then they decided to build the Time Warner Complex. And that building, which had been this absolutely immutable, indestructible mountain in on the landscape of my life, came crumbling down. I can't tell you how traumatic that was. And it was such a surprise. I was thinking, why am I reacting like this? It's a building. It's coming down. But it's not a building. It was my youth coming down. It was my childhood coming down. It was that association of growing up with a visual image that was no longer there. And it was devastating, absolutely devastating. The word in conditioned, you know, when we talk about a jivan mukta, a liberated soul, is someone who is no longer materially conditioned. It's not someone who is no longer subject to the changes going on, but who is not disturbed by those changes. It's there in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. What is that verse? The realized soul was not bewildered by such a change. Dehinos min yatadehe komara yovanam jara tatanda tehan taram prapti dhiras tattaranamuyati. A dhira who is a sage of steady mind. Dhira means calm, equipoise. Is not bewildered even by what change. Dehi nos minyat, the change of body. Death doesn't even disturb such a person because change is inevitable. And we accept that change is there. How can you do that? By recognizing that you are not the body, you're the soul within the body. Now that doesn't take place in a vacuum. That's the last sentence here that we were reading in this purport. There is a gradual process of elevation in the practice of yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. These are preface perfection by bhakti. You get to samadhi. Thank you for honoring Aindra. What happens when you get to samadhi? What do? You just sit around all day? What do you do then? No. What do you do? That's bhakti. Bhakti is the activity of the soul in eternity. And what is bhakti? Bhakti is love. Bhakti is devotion. When you're in that place, first of all, you're not worried about yourself anymore. You know you're immortal. Nothing can hurt you. The changes are going on. This is what when we had that session on the Holocaust and people who went through the Holocaust who had been brought up in mystic traditions, you know, and we talked about Princess Noor and how she was being tortured in Dachau. And she told her torturer, "You can do what you want to my body, but you cannot touch my soul." If you can find peace in a concentration camp, if Arjuna can find peace on a battlefield, can we not find peace in these rather more modest changes of our lives?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, I write down things during the week and I come with all these great ideas. I gotta talk about this. Some of them are jokes. What did I write down? Yeah.
It reminds me of the story of Lord Chaitanya. Going on his pilgrimage to Vrindavan, he's on the river, he's a boat, yeah, and it's like very quiet, we're going through Muslim territory, they're going to kill you, and it was dangerous, and there was war going on in India at the time, and Lord Chaitanya is like, "Kirtan," and everybody starts playing and having a good time, and Mac comes over and goes, "There's guards out there, there's soldiers, they're going to kill you," and Lord Chaitanya goes, "More kirtan, louder!" It's saying, take solace in mantras, take solace in chanting. It will soon give you protection if you find shelter. That's what this reminds me of.
Yeah. Ashraya. Shelter. Ashraya.
Yeah. So understand that when we study like the more subtle elements of thought, there are many contradictions. And like the subtle elements of physics are contradictory. Like light is a particle and a wave. And so when they talk about these other elements of mysticism, there's these contradictions. So on one hand, we have like satsang, and we are encouraged to associate ourselves with like-minded people. And then on the other hand, we're encouraged to see the divine in all beings. And so when your mom broke up with a friend, was there a point that, you know, maybe she could have seen or made more of an effort to see the divine in her friend, even though her friend was being depressed and negative? Was there like still some room that she could have seen the divine in her to help her overcome it? Because I understand that, you know, you have to associate yourself with like-minded people, and maybe your mom's friend wasn't a like-minded person anymore, but I guess where the boundaries are.
Yeah. My mom's the kind of person who would never, ever in her entire life abandon a friend. What you need to understand is that this was not the same person anymore. And that by staying with her, in a sense, it was encouraging the very kind of negative emotions that were doing her friend harm. Rather than contributing to the problem, she distanced herself so that she would not exacerbate it. This was not easy for my mom to do. Not easy at all. There's a right way and a wrong way to do everything on the yoga path, including separating. There's a right way to separate. And it's with compassion. It's having exhausted all of the possibilities of reconciliation. That's allowed. That's okay if by doing that you are bringing down the causes of friction and anger. You can walk away from the situation. To be a proficient yogi doesn't mean that you become a miracle worker. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden you can fix everything. we have to accept there are things that we cannot fix. That's wisdom. Wisdom means knowing, I can't fix this. That's not easy. That's not an easy thing to do, especially for someone on a devotional path. You want to help. That's what gives you greatest pleasure. You want to help. You want to do something there. Acknowledge that you cannot do everything. Only God can do everything. We have our contribution that we can make. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't do better, and it doesn't mean that we can't continue to progress and become more effective at some later stage. But we have to be very honest. I mean, Patanjali talks about practicing yoga with regard to two things, ahimsa and satya. I mean, you be honest about your yoga practice. Know how far you've progressed and how far you haven't progressed.
Our teacher, Swami Ramananda, one time David asked him a question about some difficulties that we were having with, you know them, some people. You all have met them. And these particular, some people actually worked at the yoga school, our yoga school. And David was very upset and had been upset with the situation for well, many years, actually. And so we went to visit Swami Ramananda. David explained what was going on. He wanted. David was very conscientious. You know, he had reached a breaking point to bring this type of what we had considered was don't bother Swamiji with something mundane. But it had reached a point where it was so disturbing to David that we decided, okay, let's bring it up. So, Swami Nirmalananda, he was Mauna, so he answered by writing. But he said, well, first of all, forgive them and explain to them how you see the situation. But if they don't change, and it's still going in a very negative way for many people because their activities, these some people, their what they're doing is affecting a lot of people. Try three times. After the third time, they don't get it, you just cut them out of your life. And know that you did your best. But you have to make sure you did your best, try it three times, and then let go.
It's hard to do it.
It's hard to do that. It's very hard to do it.
Especially if people you care about.
Yes.
But it's like...
But David was very shocked that he would say, well, then you just got to know when enough is enough. And I remember him writing that. You got to know when enough is enough. Don't put up with it. Because then you are perpetuating the negative energy from those some people.
Now, putting up with abuse.
You're enabling it.
Putting up with abuse is not spiritual. It's stupid.
Yeah. Basically, that's what he was saying.
It's like in an abusive relationship. It's like saying, "Well, he beats the crap out of me, but he sure can dance." You know, it's like, no. Get out. Move away from it if you can't change it. And know what you. What is that prayer? God grant me the
serenity
to know.
Exactly.
together to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
So.
But I guess it's a matter of just having to grow out of these habitual patterns. Hopefully, if we try. And as the Gita says, if we put our trust in God, then our progress will be accelerated.
Well, that's this verse.
Yeah.
If you want Gyatva Mam Shantim Richati, if you're looking for Shanti, if you want to find that place which is beyond the negative emotions, we, at some point we have to recognize that there's a higher power than ourselves. which is what, I mean, this is what people, you know, why in India there's demigod worship. You know, you've got so many different gods. Why so many gods? Why not just worship the one supreme being? Well, not everyone's ready for bhakti. You know, not everyone is ready for that ultimate surrender, ashraya, you know, taking shelter of the supreme person. So, well, if you worship this deva, you can get good sex, and if you worship that deva, you can have money, and, you know, at least acknowledge something higher than yourself in the world. It's a stepping stone.
Sorry, I'm talking so much tonight, but that's not really a question, but it's more of a statement that I love to comment on.
No, can you speak louder? I can't hear you.
Sorry.
I'd love to hear you.
It's really hard to deal with the negative emotions in yoga. We kind of have to run away from them at times and try to ignore them. Positive all the time. It's not really a question. My question is more like, what's your advice on how to deal with, you know, the concept is think when you have negative thoughts, think opposite, because the Yoga Sutra. Right? It's one of the Yoga Sutras.
Pratipaksha Bhavan.
Hare Krishna.
Right. Well, even in Hare Krishna, you know, we have negative thoughts at times, and like, you know, like, oh, he's not devotee enough.
I think the point that the Gita makes is alright, I'm going to go out on a limb here, which is where I live anyway, so what difference does it make? We have a responsibility as committed yogis to examine our behavior and not gloss over it with platitudes about, you know, converting it to positive. What does that mean, even, you know, to convert it to positive, you know? Or somehow, like, mechanically, if I'm feeling bitter, now I'll feel happy. I mean, the yogic path is one of introspection. It's one of deep, deep, deep thought. It's tragic that most yoga is taught stripped of any kind of deep thought, when that deep thought is the very heart and essence of yoga practice. Yoga is meant to bring you deep down inside to that place where you, the core self, the soul, dwells. Now, unfortunately, that's not taught enough. It's just not taught enough. What the Gita is pointing at here is, it's part of Sankhya philosophy, which is kind of stripping away the elements that cover the soul. It's understanding, okay, you know, here's a typical Sankhya exercise. I'm feeling angry right now. Why? Because that happened. Okay. Are you that?
No.
No, that's not, that's something that you observed that happened. Okay. Are you the emotion that triggered? Are you that emotion? I'm having that emotion. Right. Then, well, who are you? Well, I'm the consciousness, I'm the being going through those emotions. It doesn't stop there. Just knowing theoretically or intellectually that you're the soul within the body is not the end. That's just the beginning. Now you can begin asking, okay, if I'm this transcendent self in the body, why am I having this reaction? What is it about my behavioral makeup that gets triggered by these circumstances. That's as key to the yogic process as breathing. The breathing is meant to permit you to do that, to take a very objective look at who you've become and why. Look, I marvel at artists. You know, I marvel at artists. I wish I could paint a painting or make music. I wish I could sit down and make. I can, you know, muddle through a kirtan. But, you know, I wish I was inspired, you know, to do something artistic. And sometimes it agitates me, it hurts me, because that creative impulse is very seductive. You know, I'd like to be creative in that way, you know? I'll listen to someone playing jazz piano, and I can't just enjoy it. I'll go, oh, I wish I could do that. Uh-huh. I want to be able to master that. There's a part of me that wants to master something creatively. But that makes me think back on, well, what is it? You know, why is that? I think it has to do with the fact that I kind of copped out of growing up when I was 19. And there, while other people were out developing those skills, I was chanting mantras for 13 years in ashrams. And there are times when I have some regret that other parts of me didn't get developed. You know, that I was learning those spiritual skills, but I could have, you know, had a more predictable career. I could have, you know, I gave up piano lessons when I moved into a temple. So I don't want to ignore that. I want to understand it. And this for me was a deep meditation for a long time. Thank goodness, by, you know, Krishna's grace, I was able to come to, for myself, a conclusion there, which is that creative action has not been given up or neglected. It's been given a real home now. It's been given a real place. Instead of just wowing people with my proficiency on the keyboard or whatever, I've been given an opportunity to offer that as an act of devotion, however well I'm able to do it. That's the verse in the Gita where Krishna says, find your particular skill sets and work with them even imperfectly, because you can reach your spiritual perfection by understanding yourself and your abilities well enough to stay that course. Trying to do someone else's work is dangerous. Now, this is right out of the Gita. But it took me a while to figure out what that verse meant. You know, it meant stop lamenting some life you don't have. Look at what the miracle is of the life you do have. Isn't this amazing what a life we've been given here? Now, do the negative emotions go away? Do the bad times no longer happen? Of course they still happen. Of course those emotions are still there. But we've been given tools to navigate them. Isn't that a cause of celebration? Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that an amazing thing? My God, we've been given back our souls. We've been given back life. We were dead. We were dead. We were walking corpses. We were, you know, we could have auditioned for some of these cable series on vampires. Huh? Yeah. We've been giving back our life. Jandi.
Actually, just on the same lines, whenever I have negative emotions, I just think of the story and I think of Karan, and I realize it's like seeing a big rock and a small.
Yeah, the stories are wonderful, aren't they? They're really wonderful.
He's like, in fact, to me, personally, even bigger yogi than Krishna, because he stood steadfast even when on every step life was
Yeah, we should read more of the stories. Thank you for reminding me of that. The stories are very instructive. We did some of that on Saturday. We told the Mahabharata story on Saturday. But we could do that more often. So we should read about Karuna in the weeks ahead. Sure. Wonderful. Share, thank you.
I just want to comment on about how to deal with negative emotions. Looking at I asked myself, well, how have I dealt with that in relation to my relation to the bhakti, the way of life? And what I noticed is that most of the negative emotions I'm having are really about my resistance to the change or to the event rather than the event itself or the actual change that has happened. And when I really just can't seem to let it go, when the pain is just so overwhelming, if I can't find some way to heal myself, then eventually I have to just kind of turn it over. And I know for myself that happened about 3 or 4 years ago when I was really, just really, truly consciously developing this lifestyle. And I love Hanuman. I have a very special affinity for Hanuman. And so I was in a lot of pain. And I just got to the point where I just surrendered to it. I turned it over to Hanuman rather than trying to understand it, just to really turn it over. And what actually truly happened is that I just experienced it. Because most of what our emotions are something that we resist experiencing.
Comment. Say that again.
Most of what we do is resist emotion rather than actually feel it. Feel a sensation of being angry. Mm-hmm. What does that feel like? Well, it feels like pins and needles, or it feels hot, or it feels cold, or, you know, actually feel, oh, that's cold, you know, that's hot, you know, and just really experience it, and it just dissipated.
Very different from the whole idea of just move away from negative emotion. It's experience it more deeply. Find the source of what you're going through
so
that you can cure it.
I pray to Hanuman for the courage.
Yeah.
To face
Wonderful. Maybe if we take anything away at all from this juicy discussion here about negative emotion, it's that you're never in such a dead end that you don't have any options. That's the yoga life. The yoga says you always have options. You always have some other way to go. You are never so cornered that you're stuck and defeated. Never. You always have resources. They're always there just waiting for you. Lovely. Thank you all so much. My gosh. So are you going to do Arti? Okay. Arti is done in different ways. There's a Jiva Mukti method. I'm not sure which method we're doing this evening.
The method of your tradition.
Okay. All right. Would you like to begin Arti? You're all invited to stand and approach the altar, and we'll chant together during the Arti ceremony. Afterwards, as always, we end our gatherings with a little vegan treat, and you can have a chance just to kind of meet someone you don't know and make a new friend.
Govinda Jaya Jaya Gopala Jaya Jaya 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 Radha Ramana Hari Govinda Jaya Jaya
Jaya,
Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Jaya, Ja
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Well done. Very nice RT. Very, very nice RT. Congratulations. So what's our treat this evening,
Cher? RT's the month, right? That's how you learn. I mean,
what is
our
treat? Blueberry
cake.
What is it?
Blueberry cake.
Blueberry vegan cake.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gluten. Gluten-tootin' gluten-free.
Yeah. It's hard in the game because you're multitasking.
Thank you all very much for coming.
You don't have to be so close up.
Oh, and if you don't mind just putting your blankets back on the shelf, that would be appreciated. Thank you. Like you set the bar so high, you can never get there.